Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is November 8th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's podcast is titled Savings versus Jobs. And the reason I'm bringing this up, some of you may be aware of a recent statement and comments that were made by Christine Lagarde, the new president of the ECB, the European Central Bank. Recall she was the former managing director of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. I don't know. You consider that a lateral movement, a promotion? I don't know. But I'm sure she's happy to be the first female president of the European Central Bank. Miss Lagarde is now framing, I guess, this next paradigm or the paradigm in which we find ourselves in with low interest rates, zero interest rates, negative interest rates, quantitative easing all over the world. Shenanigans. As a contest now, if you will, between savings versus having a job. And of course, she says having a job is more important than having savings. I mean, are these the only two choices that we have? This is a total catastrophe in the making. It's already here. Savings versus a job. That's the new argument. That's the environment, I guess, in which we find ourselves. This is the central bankers. This is at their hand. Why do you work? Now, some people truly love what they do, and typically in those cases, it's not considered work. But that's the exception. That ain't the rule. And most people listening to this podcast understand that. It's the lucky few amongst us that do something that they're truly passionate about and that they love doing on a daily basis. You work to save. So you don't have to work. And now we have central bankers, and this isn't some little you-know-what country somewhere. This is the president of the European Central Bank. This is virtually as big as it gets, notwithstanding, of course, the Federal Reserve. Savings versus a job. And she's saying it's better to have a job. But what about all the people who are retired? What about all the people who are on a very fixed income because they are relying on their savings to make it through retirement? Or maybe individuals who lost their job in this global economic slowdown. What's going on with their savings? Well, thanks to you, Miss Lagarde, in your ilk, you're stealing their savings from them. In the form of inflation, of course, they say it doesn't exist, but it does, and in negative interest rates. Because instead of earning a rate of interest on their savings, they are now paying the banks, or instead of earning a rate of interest, a coupon payment from a government in Europe, they are now paying multiple governments that coupon instead. Jobs versus savings. You have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, how important a message that she is sending the world with that statement. It's no longer both. It's now which one you want, savings or jobs, because we're coming after one of them, and in fact, it's going to end up taking both of them when it's all said and done. Because before, a decade ago, the Great Recession, we talk about this all the time, it was the consumer. And even of that, it was a subsect of the consumer. It was subprime. And of course, that had huge systemic ramifications, not only in the United States, but around the world. Now, it's at every level, not just the consumer household level, but at the corporate level, the government level, and the central bank level. Who is going to bail out the government? Who is going to bail out central banks? It took a ton of money, and in my opinion, they're still doing it, bailing out Wall Street, of course, the banks who suffered the consequences of their actions, a lot of them fraudulent actions, when it came to the subprime crisis. I mean, U.S. banks, for all intents and purposes, at least on a relative basis, have bounced back more strongly than have their counterparts, particularly in Europe and in Asia. But thank God, at least for the time being, we don't have nominal negative interest rates here in the United States. We have real negative interest rates here in the United States because all you have to do is remember, you have a nominal rate, which right now it's 1.7, 0.75, 1.5, whatever the Federal Reserve wants to make it. And of course, it's going to go lower. And then you just subtract the rate of inflation, which is about 2%, and you have a negative number. Now, of course, if Donny Boy Thunderthumbs, the President of the United States, gets his way, we will have negative interest rates here in the United States. Nominal interest rates, negative interest rates here in the United States, in conjunction with quantitative easing. And of course, we're not supposed to call it quantitative easing, but nevertheless, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet over the past couple of months has increased over $200 billion, which, by the way, folks, is at a faster clip than in any other juncture of the previous quantitative easings. One, two, three, Operation Trist, what have you. Who told you that was going to happen? I did. Months ago. Back in July, very timely, before the Federal Reserve cut interest rates for the first time in years. Our presentation, Capital Economics. Are central banks trapped? Yes, they are. You better believe it. They don't have to be. They could come out and tell us the truth. They could come out and say we messed up. We made a mistake. We made an error. We thought we could unwind our balance sheets. We thought we could get back to some quote-unquote normal level with interest rates, which would be 4, 5, 6%. Oh, no, no, no. We can't do that. We can't even do that for several months here in the United States. God forbid stocks have a correction of 10, 15, 20% in the fourth quarter of 2018. Everybody's got to have a hissy fit. Donny Boy's got to whine. He's got to cry. He's got to pout. You got to turn around, Jay Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve. You got to pivot. Can't do quantitative tightening anymore. No. You're smarter than that. You got to keep the pedal to the metal, baby. Got to talk these markets up. That's all it's about. It's a big con game. That's all it is. It's a big con. I told you I don't want to talk about a lot of the market news, which is why I haven't done it in the past few days. Of course, I will still continue to talk about the ideals, free market capitalism, savings versus jobs, what that's all about, the Ray Dalio article the other day, again on capitalism, and of course, the politics, and this type of issue. Savings versus jobs, that's huge. It's huge. This is what they are telling us. They're warning us. These are your choices. You can have a job, you can have savings. Better you have a job, because at least something's coming in. But what you have saved, if you do have savings, if you're one of the rare few who has savings of any value, it's gone. We're coming for it. We're coming for it. Not to bail out Main Street. Oh, no, no, no. Main Street never gets bailed out. Don't be stupid. We got to bail out the banks. We're going to have to bail out these zombie corporations. We're going to have to bail out governments. And we're going to have to bail out the central banks. You can't make this stuff up. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm going to take the time here, like I said yesterday, talking about one of the members' audience comments about why I think the global economy is slowing down and continuing to slow down. We talked about the PMIs yesterday, but there's some other things out there. You have some surveys out there with the CEOs and CFOs warning that there's likely to be a recession next year. Well, surprise, surprise. But of course, you have a divergence. Because you have CEOs and CFOs very, very concerned that there's going to be a recession next year, or at least a continuation of a slowdown in the global economy and in the United States as well. And yet you have U.S. consumer sentiment hitting a four-month high. Now, I think the consumer sentiment, for all intents and purposes, is a joke, more or less, to be perfectly honest with you. It's really just a reflection of what the stock market has done in the prior month when the survey was taken. And we're hitting all-time highs. So what do you think the consumer is going to think? And of course, the last pillar left to fall is the U.S. consumer, which we're hanging all of our hats on. Which, by the way, they are indebted up to their eyeballs once again, paying higher interest rates, the highest ever. No, what could possibly go wrong? Oh, absolutely nothing. You're just going to have your savings taken away from you. But if you're one of the lucky who has a job, maybe you have two jobs, maybe you have three jobs if you're really lucky in the greatest economy ever. You're working three jobs. That makes sense, doesn't it? The greatest economy ever and you got people working two, three jobs. I mean, I guess they should be thankful that they have the opportunity to work two or three jobs, but I bet they'd rather have that time with their family or friends or doing something else than working three jobs. Or maybe having a full-time job that could pay the bills. But no. This is the greatest economy ever. And you have a choice, jobs or savings. This is what happens when you have stock markets around the world that are completely decoupled from the fundamentals. So getting back to our CEOs and our CFOs and our consumers, who do you think has a better pulse on what lies ahead? CEOs and CFOs who sit down, at least hopefully they sit down, they come up with a plan, they come up with a strategy, they look out, they're trying to have a plan for the next quarter, next 6 months, next year, next 2 years, next 3 years, if they're really forward-looking, if they're not just worried about pleasing Wall Street for the next 12 weeks or whatever it is. Who do you think has a better pulse? I would argue that it's the CEOs and CFOs, because they're the ones who know if they are going to be investing in plants and equipment and all that stuff that would generate economic growth. If they're going to be putting a pause on capital expenditures, which we have seen, which continues to slow down, by the way. If they're going to put a pause on hiring, or if they're going to continue to hire, or if they're going to start to lay off people. I think the CEOs and the CFOs have a better pulse on whether or not they are going to be hiring people, putting a freeze on hiring, or laying them off, as opposed to the average Joe and Jane out there, 9 to 5, clocking in. I mean, a lot of times now you have stories in the news all the time where they get a text message from their company, from the corporation. Don't come in, you're laid off. You get a text message now. Human resource, folks, you're a human resource. You're not a human being, you're a human resource. Can't even tell you to your face. You get a text message. Don't come in. You're laid off. Very personal. Very good. Better have savings. You better get it, because Christine Lagarde and company is coming for it. Because now you don't have a job because you just got a text message. Don't come in. Greatest economy ever, by the way, if you haven't heard. I don't even know where to go with this. This is disgusting. This is a choice. This is what they're telling you. This is a warning. This is a shot across the bow. And really, if you're honest with yourself, you knew this was coming. If you pay attention to this podcast, you knew this was coming. Where else are they going to get the money? Of course, they can print it. That's what they're doing. But if you actually need the capital, if you actually, you actually have some of it lying around in places, where is it? It's in savings. It's in savings. It's in your retirement account. It's in Social Security. It's in a whole bunch of government programs that have been promised to you that the government will, they'll stick their greasy, slimy little fingers in it to take it, to bail themselves out before they bail out Main Street. We've seen them do it before. They will do it again. They're not beholden to you and me, even though we're the ones who actually put them in office. Why we do it, I don't know, but that's what we do. They take a pledge of allegiance to ExxonMobil, to Johnson & Johnson, to Lockheed Martin, to Boeing. That's who they swear an oath to. Not to you and me. You didn't get a check 2008, 2009. You got laid off. You lost your job. And I don't like this game of class warfare. Really don't. But this is their doing. Savings versus jobs. These are your choices. And who cares? Nobody, until it's you. But guess who's starting to feel the pinch? The people in Lebanon, the people in Iraq, the people in Chile, people in Bolivia, Haiti, Egypt, Hong Kong. And don't worry, it's going to be coming to a theater near you very shortly. I don't say this to frighten you. Don't say this for exaggeration or to be hyperbolic. I say this because it's going to happen. I have a pretty good track record of predicting what's coming down the pike. Been doing this podcast since February. I talk about our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, here all the time. I actually read a few chapters yesterday in response to some definitions of what free market capitalism actually is, what fascism is, and then take a step back, take a deep breath, be honest with yourself, and then ask yourself, what type of system do we have here in the United States? You cannot make an argument that it's free market capitalism, not even close. So how can you blame free market capitalism for what ails us? Capital doesn't come from a printing press, okay? Fascism is the marriage, the unholy marriage, of big business and big government. And who do you think it's going to serve? Those two entities, big business and big government. Why do you think government has $4 trillion every year that they spend at the federal level? Why do you think corporations have a $1 trillion market cap? You have Microsoft and Apple, $1 trillion market caps. Those companies in and of themselves would be some of the largest economies in the world. Think about that for a second. Does that make sense to you? Or is that maybe inflationary? Is that where all this easy money's been going? Because they're joined at the hip with the government. Interesting question, isn't it? Because these markets, all you got to do, folks, all you got to do is prime the pump, make sure only about, I'd say, 10 stocks, and it might not even be that many, but if they can continue to juice 10 stocks, and you know their names, this market will continue to go up. It will continue to carry the rest of the market up with it. 10 stocks, that's it. You think that's a market economy? Not even close. Not even close. This will never be a socialist country? Too late! We've been there, done that. You're lying to yourself if you believe otherwise. Deficits don't matter here. They don't matter. Donald Trump doesn't give a damn. $3 trillion added to the national debt during his 3 years in office, and he doesn't care. He doesn't even mention it. In fact, he was happy with it. He was applauding himself for getting the deal done with the Democrats to raise the debt ceiling, which all but guarantees $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see. And that's assuming we don't enter a recession. That'll be $1.5 trillion, maybe two, maybe $2.5 trillion deficits. You going to pay for it? Yeah, you are going to pay for it with your savings. I just told you. You see how this is all connected? But your 401k is up. Yeah, I know. They're going to come take it. Because that's where the money is. That's where it went. You're going to be smart enough to get your hands on that cash before it crashes? I don't think so. And in fact, you can't even touch that money if it's in a 401k. Or you're going to be taxed and you're going to be fined. Interesting, isn't it? How they do this. Difficult for you to win, but very easy for them to win. Free market capitalism? It's completely opposite picture. You're in control. We're in control. A constitutional republic, which we're supposed to have in this country, we're in control. Do you feel like you're in control? We have a country that's on the brink of civil war. We have an impeachment inquiry that's a circus on both sides. You don't know who's telling the truth. I think they're all lying. I'd like to lock them all up. The Obamas, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Trumps. Throw them all in. Lock them up. Throw away the key. And put a camera on them. Wouldn't that be interesting reality TV? Those families behind bars. Oh my God. Savings versus jobs. And the CEOs, CFOs predicting a recession next year. And yet you have the consumer walking around in his Prozac coma thinking everything's okay. Until they get that text, don't come into work. I don't mean to be gloomy. I really don't. I'd like to be bullish. I'd like to be optimistic. But there's no leadership. There's nobody who's out there telling you the truth. So what are you supposed to do? Continue to lie? Continue to pump yourself with drugs? I don't know what the answer is. I'm just doing my best to paint the picture that exists so we can be prepared to the best of our abilities. That's why I tell you every day, stay diversified and stay vigilant. You better have a little bit of everything because you don't know what's going to take off. Could be stocks, could be bonds, could be something in the currency market, could be precious metals, although precious metals have gotten whacked over the past couple of days. I mean whacked. Let me see where we are actually with them. I'll let you know 1 second. What we got? Gold at $1,450 an ounce. It was at $1,500 not too long ago. And we have silver at $16.72 an ounce. It was slightly above $18 the other day. Then on top of that, we have the U.S. 10-year bond yielding 1.95%. Whoops. 1.95%? Are you kidding me? That's pretty high, don't you think? For a central bank, a Federal Reserve who's trying to get interest rates lower, the 10-year only hooks itself to the mortgage rates. You know, it's pretty important, the housing market in this country, at least that's what we're told. 1.95%. There's not quantitative easing. They're not targeting the longer end of the curve, which would include the 10-year note. They want to go after the bills. Everything, you know, 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year. That's what they're targeting. Because they're trying to get the yield curve uninverted. They're trying to get it to where it usually is. And they've been successful in that, but have they gone too far? You know, we did an interesting podcast, at least I think it was interesting, maybe a month, month and a half ago. Is there trouble in the bond market? And we talked about this very thing because for a very long time, and this is commonplace, by the way, you sometimes get a mixed signal from the bond market versus the stock market. You have to understand that the bond market is many, many times larger than the stock market. And it's usually the better signal. The stock market's good at forecasting things, but the bond market is usually much better. It's usually the adults in the room in the bond market, and it's the frat boys in the stock market. And the adults usually do a better job. Not always, but usually. And this is a game of probabilities. That's why a melt-up is possible. The addicts on Wall Street can get their way. There could be another 10, 15, 20%, maybe even more of a run-up. Or maybe this whole thing is off. Maybe, just maybe, these central bankers pulled it off. And everything's fine. That this bull market will continue into eternity. I'm very doubtful of that. I don't believe that. But it's a possibility, just not a probability in my analysis. There needs to be a healthy correction. And again, it's going to be sizable if it's a healthy one, if it's a real one. But they are right now throwing everything in the kitchen sink to prevent that from happening. And thus far, they have been successful. You got to give them credit for that. But we have the U.S. 10-year Treasury at 1.95%. Well, that's not good when the Federal Reserve is trying to get interest rates down, when they're trying to spur economic growth. What happens if that mortgage rate now starts to tick back up? Which it's going to have to. If the 10-year Treasury is going up, those mortgage rates are going to have to go up too. That was supposed to be the saving grace. Let's get these interest rates down and we'll get people back into the housing market. Let's get people in the construction market again. Let's get everything going again. Come on, boys, let's go. Chop, chop. Well, if you got this thing ticking up 1.95%, what is this telling us? Because the price of a bond and its yield is inversely related. So if the yield's going up, the price is going down. It means people are selling bonds. Is this because they think it's a risk-on event? So they can pull their money out of treasuries, which is supposedly a risk-free asset, and put it into the stock market because they think, well, this bull market's going to continue. I don't need a risk-free asset anymore. Or is the bond market telling us $23 trillion in debt and growing here in the United States, $17 trillion worth of negative yielding debt around the world, and an idiot in the ECB telling us it's an argument between savings and jobs? Maybe, just maybe, government bonds are no longer a risk-free asset. Is that what we are in the midst of? This isn't going to happen overnight, by the way. That's how deep and big these markets are. But is this another crack in the foundation? Are we going to start to see the Federal Reserve start to manipulate the longer end of the curve now? Are they going to start buying 10-year notes to get those yields back down so everybody can go buy a mortgage? Even though the asset inflation is going to increase the price of the house. But don't worry, honey. We got a great rate. The house is $1 million, but it's 3.5%. You can't beat that. That's the rationale that exists. And that's why this whole thing is going to be, it's a house of cards. It's going to be crumbling down. And they're coming for your savings. And with it, you're going to lose the jobs too. Believe me when I tell you. It's not going to be pretty. They're already seeing it in most of the world. They're seeing it in the weakest links. It's always the weakest links that break first. That's why they're the weakest links. This is not transitory. This is history in the making. Oh, and by the way, there's no U.S.-China trade deal. Did you hear that one? No, there's nothing. They were supposed to be, Donald Trump and President Xi of China, they were supposed to be meeting, of course, next week in Chile. We talked about this for the Asian-Pacific Summit, Economic Summit. That got canceled because, well, you know, these people are protesting. They're pissed off down in Chile. So the government of Chile said, no, we got to call this whole thing off. It's a riot down here, literally. We can't have this going on. So it's canceled. And it was never rescheduled or the location moved. This was supposed to be phase one. That was supposed to be the deal. Kickstart everything. Everything's supposed to be fine and dandy. That would have been next week or a few days after. think maybe the 17th or 18th of this month. Not happening anywhere at this point. Not happening anywhere. And you've had a story that has been out there the past couple of days where China, again, is now out there saying, oh, no, everything is going well. And in fact, the U.S. is going to start to roll back tariffs. Yes, this is coming from the Chinese. This is what the Chinese are saying. We're making progress in phase one. To be successful, the U.S. has to roll back tariffs. And they said, we're going to do it. And at first, you had White House officials, allegedly people within the White House, coming out and saying, yes, that is true. We are going to roll back tariffs. I think it was Wilbur Ross, Commerce Secretary, and I know Larry Kudlow was out there saying this. Yes, tariff rollbacks will be a part of the phase one deal. But the idiot, Peter Navarro, he don't like that too well. He didn't like it. So he comes out and says, that's not true. Nobody ever said this. This is propaganda from the Chinese. Who predicted this? We did here at the Capitol News months ago. Again, goes to that word credibility. Because you've had the president in the White House on the U.S. side here for a year and a half saying everything's fine. There's going to be a deal there never was. Now he said, well, wait a minute. You got the boastful, loudmouth Americans talking, and you got the quiet Chinese sitting in the corner. I said, what happens when they start talking? Well, they are. They're starting to talk. They're starting to say there's a deal. And a condition of that deal, which has already been agreed to, is the rolling back of tariffs. But guess what? That's not true either. So who do you believe? You believe neither of them. Like I've been telling you for months. Peter Navarro doesn't like it. Peter Navarro has Donald Trump's ear. Peter Navarro convinced Donald Trump not to roll back the tariffs. So that's what Donald Trump has come out and said personally. We're not rolling back the tariffs. Well, if the Chinese are going to make that a condition of the deal that the U.S. tariffs have to be rolled back, well, then what does that mean for a phase one deal? And recall, it was only a few weeks ago when, Vice Premier Li He from China was over here with these high-level negotiations in the Oval Office, and Donald Trump, you know, he holds up his piece of paper. Look, folks, we got a deal. Phase one, best thing ever. Aren't I fantastic? There is no phase one deal. There isn't. But we continue to hear that there's progress. There's progress. There's been progress for 2 years. You know who's made real good progress? The Brazilians have made fantastic progress with the Chinese. The Russians have made beautiful progress with the Chinese. And President Macron of France just met with President Xi, and they just agreed to some $15 billion arrangement. And a lot of that has to do with agricultural products. But the art of the deal, Donald Trump, can't close. Interesting, isn't it? Meanwhile, we have a surge in farming bankruptcies here in the United States. He told us we were going to get tired of winning. Does that sound like winning to you? Not for U.S. farmers, for Brazilian farmers, for Russian farmers, for French farmers. It's fantastic. Can't make it up. And I can assure you, next week we're going to be told that there's a deal. Maybe there will be. I'm not going to believe it. I don't think the markets are going to believe it. Because now the markets are pinned. Who do we believe? And I told you this from the beginning. This was the whole problem. This is why you don't lie. This is why you don't be the little boy who cries woof. Because who are the markets going to believe? Are they going to believe the president of the United States, the leader of the free world? Or are they going to believe President Xi, the leader of the Chinese Communist Party? If the markets in the world starts to believe the leader of the Communist Party over the leader of the free world, we got a big problem, ladies and gentlemen. Big problem. We're at that tipping point. And there have been occasions where the markets have believed the Chinese over us. But if that becomes the overarching theme here, where they don't care what Navarro says, they don't care what Kudlow says, they don't care what Mnuchin says, they don't care what Wilbur Ross says, they don't care what Robert Lighthizer says, they don't care what Mike Pence says, they don't care what Donald Trump says, but they do care what President Xi says. We're in a lot of trouble. Is this what you want? It's not what I want. It's not what I voted for. But what are our choices? Sociopaths and socialists. And they're coming for your savings, and they're coming for your jobs. They told us that's what they're going to do, and I believe them. We're up over $200 billion on the balance sheet at the Federal Reserve, a faster rate than which they have ever done during previous versions of quantitative easing. Although this time, it's not quantitative easing. It's probably because it's quantitative easing squared. I told you, if they were going to get involved in this game again, it is going to have to eclipse what they did in QE1, 2, Operation Twist, and QE3. Because the laws of diminishing marginal returns have kicked in. They know it. They're scrambling. That's why they are involved in the overnight market. The markets are trying to take control of this whole thing. They're saying 1.75, 1.5 ain't going to cut it. You got to pay me 8, 9, 10% on an overnight basis. Federal Reserve said, no way, no how, we got to intervene to the tune of $100 billion a night to get these rates to where we're trying to control them to be. Where they're trying to control them to be. That is central planning. That is not free market capitalism. Printing money is not capital. You work for capital. You trade your time and your labor for capital. What you save is your capital. Not funny money. Don't believe me? Print money. Go use it and see what happens to you. No, don't do that, because they're going to lock you up and throw away the key. But these idiots, they sit around a table rolling dice, playing Parcheesi, and God knows what. And whatever number comes up, that's what the interest rate is. I don't know how they come up with this stuff. They don't either. Look at reality. We talk about Ray Dalio, the income inequality. We talk about the people protesting everywhere. It's all connected, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're starting to see that. And to the audience members who have asked those questions, I hope that answered some of your question here today, why I believe the global economy continues to slow down. Look at auto sales. Look at the surveys from the CEOs and the CFOs. Look at the yield curve, which, again, it is uninverted, which is really the signal that the recession is right around the corner. Look at the Federal Reserve's website, for God's sake. Multiple, because there are 12 districts. Go to the multiple banks, the Atlanta Fed, the New York Fed, the Cleveland Fed. All of their forecasts for GDP in the fourth quarter are at 1% or below. We talk about the cash freight index as being a leading economic indicator. They're projecting negative GDP growth in the fourth quarter. Now, maybe I'm in a bubble. Maybe everybody's wrong, including the Federal Reserve at their various district banks. I don't think so. Construction being in contraction, manufacturing being in contraction, major slowdown in auto sales. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're going to be in a melt-up. Maybe everything's peaches and cream. Maybe there's a fantastic U.S.-China trade deal waiting in the wings, and we're going to sell more soybeans than we've ever sold before, which means you're going to buy everything else, because if somebody's selling soybeans, you're going to go buy a Mercedes. I guess that's how that works. They didn't teach me that in econ school, but what do I know? Hope it's starting to make sense. Stay diversified. Stay vigilant and stay with the Capital News. It is Friday. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see what takes place over the weekend. I'm sure there might be some more transcripts that get dropped out there. I might take a look at those, do a week ahead segment. Maybe there'll be some pertinent economic news that drops somewhere over the weekend. See what happens with some of these protests that are going to continue around the world, in Hong Kong in particular, in the Middle East. We want to focus particular attention to, because they're not going away anytime soon, nor should they. These people are fighting for their lives. They're fighting for their families. They're fighting for their countries. And may God be with them all, because they're standing up for themselves finally. We'll see if we do that here in the United States. Leave your comments. We love hearing from you. Enjoy your weekend. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.